Welcome to a special Fifth Friday edition of Dakota Midday from South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Carl Gerke. Jazz often reflects the rhythms of big city life, but acclaimed jazz composer Maria Schneider's music evokes rural landscapes. Coming up, we'll hear how, after 3 decades in New York City, she's still inspired by her childhood in southwestern Minnesota. Plus, this year marks the 50th anniversary of the Minnesota Twins' pennant-winning season that took the team to the World Series for the first time. We'll talk with the author of a new biography of one of the team's beloved stars, Tony Oliva. But first, it's been about a year since Vermilion's new water tower went into operation. Now, there's nothing unusual or unique about it. The spheroid tank sits high above the town with Vermilion's logo painted on the side. And just like in other smaller communities across the state, it helps define the town's rather modest skyline. But because water towers are everywhere, I never really thought much about them or how they work. I knew gravity and pressure were involved, but I wanted to find out more. So I called the engineering and architectural consulting firm that helped with the design and construction of Vermilion's water tower.
My name is Chad Bachman. I'm a project manager with Banner Associates out of Brookings, South Dakota. I've been working with water towers for about the last 15 years.
But Chad Bachman didn't start his career with any special interest in water towers. He had another expertise.
When I started my first job, they were looking for somebody that wasn't afraid to climb up on a water tower. And so my lack of fear of heights allowed me to take the opportunity to climb a water tower, and next thing you know, 15 years later, I'm the water tower guy because I started out because I wasn't afraid to climb a water tower.
And what do towns look like from the top of a water tower?
I'll tell you what, it's a very unique view that not very many people get to enjoy. I can guarantee the top of a water tower is a view that is pretty special and not everybody gets to see.
So when you start with a community that says we need a water tower, how do you find the place for it? How do you decide how big it should be and how tall?
You know, there's a history on water towers, and as I was preparing for our discussion today, I was doing a little digging, and I ran across some very interesting stuff on water towers, and, you know, a good chunk of it is what everybody is aware of is, you know, they provide pressure for the community so that you can go about your day-to-day lives. The location of the water towers is usually between the supply and where the demand is, because not only on top of providing pressure for the system, it also provides storage. You know, during the morning when everybody wakes up and everybody's taking a shower at the same time, or at night when everybody is preparing supper and getting home, the water tower is there to supply that. You know, if we had to have pumps to make that happen, we'd have to oversize those pumps for that 15 minutes in the morning and 15 minutes at night or hour at night when everybody's using water. And the water tower really does buffer that demand so that the water's there when everybody needs it.
So essentially, you've got the water there in the morning, it's available, and then overnight then, when there's not that demand, then the pumps pump water back up into the water towers?
Boy, you're exactly right, Carl. That's exactly right. It allows us to pump water over a more like a 24-hour part of the day, you know, so I don't have to pump as hard and as fast, and it basically allows you to buffer those demands. You're exactly right.
So how does the basic concept of water towers work? How, for example, you get the chain from, say, the reservoir, the well, to water in our homes? How does the water tower fit in that chain?
I was trying to think of a good analogy that I could say, and you know, a good kind of thought I was thinking about is, you know, it's like a periscope of a submarine that sticks up through the surface of the water, and underneath the surface there's a whole other set of another part of equipment going on, and that's exactly what the water tower is. You know, it's basically feeding the pipes, and all those pipes are underground. There's just millions and millions of miles of networks of pipe, even just in South Dakota, and what those towers do is basically provide you a pressure to get water through those pipes.
So the history of water towers, how far back does this concept go? I mean, how long have they been around?
You know, I was doing a little research, and the first water tower that I could find back in the state of South Dakota was around about 1884, and that was in Yankton. And the water towers have changed so much from, obviously, 1884, just like everything else has. South Dakota lags behind the rest of the nation, but for the most part, about the mid-1880s is the time that water towers in the state of South Dakota came about. And Yankton was, I believe, is the proud owner of having the first water tower. And when I say water tower, it was probably nothing more than a couple wooden boxes holding water up on some wooden legs. And so that was kind of the first record that I could find of having an elevated water tower in the state of South Dakota.
When did they start making them out of steel?
About 1890 was when steel water towers were being readily manufactured and sold to the municipalities. That kind of was the trend from about 1890 to 1900, roughly. Riveted steel tanks were used at that point in time. Then about 1920, they kind of stagnated. It was all riveted tanks. And one of the interesting things that I found was the 1900s tanks, they look like a pop can on top of stilts. And you've probably seen them. They kind of got a cone shape, a roof on them. And what happened is the public was demanding for something a little bit more aesthetically pleasing rather than the pop can on the stilts. And so one of the major manufacturers of steel tanks offered a competition to say, let's find a different design. And as a result of that competition in the 1920s, came about a lot of different styles, and that's what you see out there today. And that's really based on the competition of a tank manufacturer saying, come on, guys, we got to find something different.
Has the basic concept, technology, just the very basics of how these water towers work, has that changed at all over the, say, 100, 150 years?
I would say the basics really haven't changed at all. I mean, it's still today, just like it did in the 1900s or even the 1890s, it relies on gravity. You pump that water up to the water tower, and whether it's sitting 15 feet up on the wooden stilts or if it's 200 feet in the air on a steel tank sitting on top of a concrete dome, it gravity is what's really working there.
These things are made out of steel. How is it that the water is clean and it stays potable?
Basically, what was driving some of the waterworks industry in the 1900s was a lot of the disease outbreaks. Typhoid and cholera were two of the ones that were driving the need for clean water. You know, getting water to communities and people was a good luxury and allowed them to do a lot of things, but then water quality kind of came after the fact. So just like I did the analogy of the submarine or water towers, really the part of the system that you see, and there's miles of pipe, but also there's water treatment plants. There's a lot of treatment technology, and when you talked about growth in the industry, water towers really are about the same as they've always been, but the technology and the way that water is treated is really where the forefront or the cutting edge of the knife is in the water technology or water field.
Does every community have to have a water tower?
No, not necessarily. There's two big components. Obviously, you can pressurize the system, and you can do that with the gravity of the water tower, or you can do it with pumps. The part that is missing out when you don't have a water tower is the fire protection. Fire protection is obviously something that there was a big need in the 1900s with the fire outbreaks and having no way to fight that fire. So having elevated water or water in the air allows you to fight those fires and put those out.
Well, Chad, do you have any favorite water towers?
I've been pretty fortunate to be on top of several water towers in the area, and probably I was doing a little research on this, and about two-thirds of the elevated water towers are on the eastern side of the state, and that has a lot to do with the density of the population, and it also has a lot to do with our geography. We're pretty flat over here, so in order to get that water up in the air, a water tower makes the most sense. My favorite water tower, I guess, would have to be one out in Rapid City. I had the opportunity to be on both of those water towers in the city of Rapid City, and the view from up on top of that water tower, because it's on the edge of the hills and you can see quite a ways to the east and quite a ways to the west, is probably by far my favorite water tower in the area.
That's Chad Bachman. project manager with the Brookings engineering and architectural consulting firm Banner & Associates. One of the firm's recent projects was Vermilion's new water tower. You're listening to a special Fifth Friday edition of Dakota Midday from South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Carl Gerke. Coming up after a short break, we'll talk with acclaimed jazz composer Maria Schneider, whose music evokes the prairie landscape of her childhood. And later this hour, we'll talk with the author of a new biography of beloved Minnesota Twins legend, Tony Oliva.